Okay, my next word, I can't read my own writing, is thanatousia. Thanatousia, which basically is funeral rites.
Okay.
So I was looking up some of the 10 weirdest funeral rites. There are some really awful ones, mostly against women. So there's this whole thing about women immolating themselves, like setting themselves on fire.
I've heard
after
of that
their
one.
And it's meant to be voluntary, but a lot of the time they just got dragged over and kind of like set alight. Vikings were pretty awful. Basically,
what?
Yeah.
News to me.
So if a Viking nobleman died, one of the slave girls volunteered to follow him into death. So the chieftain's body was put into a temporary grave for 10 days while new clothes were being prepared for him. Apparently, dry cleaning took a lot longer in Viking times. During this time, one of his slave girls had volunteered to join him in the afterlife. She was then guarded day and night and given copious amounts of intoxicating drink. Once the cremation ceremony got started, the girl went from tent to tent to have intercourse with every man in the village. As the men were having intercourse with her, maybe not fully consensually,
surely not.
They would say, "Tell your master that I did this because of my love for him." And then she would be taken to a tent where she would have intercourse with 6 Viking men. Then she was strangled to death with rope and finally stabbed by a village matriarch. And then they'd pop her on the boat with the dead man and set fire to it all.
That sounds like the best funeral
I've ever... What a party!
you'd be looking forward to your relatives dying. Yeah, that is... How do those traditions arise? Who thinks
because
like...
Vikings were insane.
I mean, it's just such an incredibly horrific series of events going on there.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just one of them.
It started off and you were like, she gets loads of booze.
Okay.
I was like, yeah, okay, I could volunteer to be sacrificed. Okay. But the rest, not so much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are quite a few weird ones. There's ritual finger amputation. This is the Dani people of West Papua New Guinea. Every time one of their relatives died, they have to cut off a finger. So you better hope that you don't have big families.
Yeah.
It's been banned now. It's meant to be like an expression of grief and to drive away spirits and things. So your fingers are tied tightly with string and then cut off with an axe. The leftover piece is then dried and burned to ashes or stored in a special place. It's now banned, but you can like... There's a picture here of an old man with like 3 fingers left because all of the other ones have been cut off.
It's probably a viable method of population control, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah. Nobody die. Nobody have anybody.
Don't have any more kids.
Yeah.
The problem
one
is
enough.
If you are unlucky enough to have 10 relatives who die, you too will die.
Yeah.
And then it would just start a chain of events where people keep cutting off their last fingers and being like, oh no, I can't eat now.
Yeah, some of them are awful. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's really great. I mean, not great.
I feel like I can grieve without amputating a part of my body.
Yeah, I mean, also maybe without... apparently there's people in Madagascar who... they want to hasten decomposition, so they unbury, dig up, there we go. they're dead. And then rewrap them in fresh cloth and then dance with the corpses around the tomb to live music. It's called the turning of the bones. The ritual has been around for 3 centuries, one that the local Christian churches are doing their best to stamp out. But nobody's going to say no to a party, are they?
3 centuries isn't even that long.
No, that's fairly recent.
I mean, that's sort of... We were having the Industrial Revolution then.
and
they were starting to do that.
Like, they might have just been like, hey, we need another excuse for a festival.
Yeah, it was just a group of kids.
Or like, it was the one girl left at the dance, didn't have anyone to go with. We're like, we'll dig up Grandpa for you now.
So that's my fact. I thought that was quite fun.
That
in
is,
a gory, horrific way.
What was the original word?
Hang on. Oh, don't make me say it again. Thanatousia.
Cool.
So there we go.
I'll keep that in mind when I have to write my will.
I want people to dance with, to waltz with me until I decompose.
Yeah. Until I decompose. Just like weeks later, bits dropping off.
Yeah. Just this one really tired girl, like, please make it stop.
Well, my next word is gormless. Which wanting sense or discernment, and it's a fairly well known word.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of connotations of like mouth breather levels of stupidity, isn't it? Just like that kind of vacant look.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to be called gormless.
Yeah, and so it's. But the reason I've picked it out is it's an example of a fossil word, which means it is a derivative of a word that no longer exists. So,
gorm, you can have gorm.
Yeah, you used to be able to have gorm. And I've got most of these facts from The Etymologicon by Mark Forsyth, which is a great book. I would recommend it.
Good citing there.
It's just really funny. Like, I don't know how, because it's about what etymology. But, so basically, yeah, gorm used to mean sense or understanding.
Oh, cool.
But it was only really used in Yorkshire, and it wasn't written down.
Oh, well, we're in the right place then.
Yeah, but in Wuthering Heights, there is the line... Did I ever look so stupid, so gormless, as Joseph calls it? And if you've read, Joseph is obviously really York. He's like the most Yorkshire person that's ever been.
He is the most impossible person to read in a book I think I've ever encountered.
My version had translation at the back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cheat.
And so so Joseph the Yorkshireman says gormless in this novel that's done incredibly well.
Yeah.
But he doesn't say gorm. And obviously he knew the word gorm. He just happened to be, say, gormless in the line.
Ah, okay.
And so gradually that gorm dies away, but gormless is like, oh, Emily Bronte used it. This word's great.
Cool. Well, I mean, it's like you can... whelmed used to be a word. You know the way you say underwhelmed? Mm. Whelmed used to be a word that meant like pleasantly... Like surprised or
satisfied. Oh, yeah, because I guess overwhelmed.
Satisfied.
Overwhelmed. It does have kind of bad connotations of being like too much, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So there must be loads of words like that we use all the time.
Overwhelmed, wombling three.
Are you okay?
Do you know the wombles?
This G&T has got to.
So I've got a couple of others. Feckless comes from the word effect. So if you... are lazy and you do not affect the world, you have no effect on it, then you are feckless.
Oh, that's cool. I never knew that.
So that's why it's like lazy and feckless. And
cool.
Then wreck was care or taking notice of, like being conscious of something.
Yeah.
And if say reckless is like not caring.
Oh.
And Ruth is the sort of past tense of to rue.
Okay.
So, like, if you rue, I rue the day that I ever...
I rue the day I ever set eyes on you.
Yeah, exactly. And so, that person who rues the day that he ever set eyes on, that someone else, has Ruth. They have
Ruth. He has Ruth.
And if you don't rue anything, if you don't care about what you've done, you're ruthless.
Cool. This is... apologies to anyone out there whose name is Ruth.
Yeah, Ruth has completely died out. No one ever says it anymore.
Those are really cool. I really like things like that. I think etymology is quite fun because often words have very strange origins.
Well, I would recommend that book in that case.
Cool. Are you an Amazon representative, Luke?
Yes, I have shared.
Infiltrated radio.
I got it for Christmas a couple of years ago and it was so good. I brought it into this radio show. I only did this radio show just to plug it.
No, you've succeeded your purpose. You're going to run away and never return.
Yeah.
Will I do my next word? What time are we on?
We're on 37 past six.
Oh, okay. Right.
Is that a normal way to say the time?
37 past six? I don't think so. So this one that I chose is, I don't know how to say this, and it's quite a well-known word. Trousseau? You know, a bride's kind of collection of clothes for her wedding.
No.
Is that a well-known word?
Yeah, it is. I've heard it before.
Is it on Don't Tell the Bride? Because if it's
possibly. Basically, I saw this word and then I thought, oh, wouldn't it be interesting to look up weird wedding? So I've gone death rituals. Now I'm going to go weird wedding traditions. Some of these are really strange. Okay, so in China... In a certain culture in China, grooms shoot their future brides with a bow and arrow, minus the arrowheads, three times, and then they break the arrows to ensure the couple stay in love forever. In Mauritania, I don't know where that is.
Mauritania.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to pretend, we're going to gloss over that. In Mauritania, girls aged between 5 and 15 are sent to fat farms before their wedding to pile on the pounds.
Fat farms?
Yeah. If a bride has stomach rolls, stretch marks, and overlapping thighs, it signals her husband was wealthy enough to keep her satisfied.
To keep her at fat camp.
Yeah. Like, but apparently it's really bad because they like force feed them and stuff. Well, and it leads to health harm. Like, oh, it's awful. In Scotland, there's a thing called blackening of the bride, where brides-to-be are taken by surprise by their friends ahead of the big day and pelted with all sorts of rubbish such as curdled milk, dead fish, spoiled food, tar and feathers. Then she's tied to a tree and after taken for a night of drinking. The belief is that if she can withstand this kind of treatment, she can handle anything that comes her way in her marriage. So it's like, if you can handle fish heads being thrown at you, then a husband will be no bother.
I think that tells you everything you know about guys.
Yeah. What else is there? In Korea, the groom has to have his feet beaten with fish or a cane before his first night as a married man to test his true strength and character.
Fish or a cane.
Yeah. Which would you choose?
And also, why did it become an option to have one or the other?
Maybe it's just what's available at the time.
Yeah, I guess so.
In India, there are women who are born between a certain period of time who are apparently cursed and are going to be unlucky in marriage. So before they get married, they have to marry a tree, and then they cut down the tree so that the curse is already out, and then they can get married.
Ingenious.
Yeah.
In France, newlyweds are forced to drink leftovers from their wedding out of a toilet. Nowadays, chocolate and champagne are used as a substitute, but still served out of a toilet.
Still in the toilet.
Yeah. The idea was to give the bride and groom strength before their wedding night, apparently.
Ah, yes, that famed toilet strength.
Yeah. In Ireland, when you dance at a wedding, the bride's feet must stay on the floor at all times. So I imagine that she has to shuffle everywhere just in case some evil fairies whip her away.
Can you invite me to your wedding session?
Yeah, just watch me shuffle around the floor.
Just like sliding across the floor.
In German weddings, guests bring the happy couple any type of porcelain except glass. Well, glass isn't porcelain, but anyway, article. And then smash them in the belief that this will ward off evil spirits. And then the couple have to clean up the mess together, learning that married life will not be easy, but by working together, they can overcome any challenge.
I don't think cleaning up is that much of a challenge. Like, it's not fun, but...
Yeah. I mean, unless they have to lick up the glass, the porcelain shards or something.
Together we can do this.
Yeah.
Also, that's a terribly inverted version of what most people get given, like, kitchen supplies on their wedding move in together. It's like, oh, here's your plate set. Smash!
Yeah.
Well, I imagine, I mean, depending when that tradition first came about, cleaning was probably harder, kind of, in the past.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Maybe brooms were invented.
Yeah, I think they've had brooms for a while, but
probably brooms. Yeah.
Before Dyson.
Yeah, before Dyson came along. They were still changing bags in their vacuum cleaners in the 16th century.
I mean, living like animals.
Amazon delivery took weeks.
That horse and cart. So unreliable.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought some of those were quite fun. Some of them were pretty horrible. The fat farms thing is not something that I ever want to read about again, ever. In Mauritania.
So when you say between 5 and 15, for 10 years they're at fat farms.
For 10 years.
Oh my God.
Wait,
between the ages of 5 and 15.
Are you sure that's not just at any point between the ages?
Yeah.
I looked it up.
A summer.
Hang on. I looked it up in a different...
summer camp at the fat farm.
Because if you spent 10 years as a child just being force fed, you'd turn into like one of those... geese they use for foie gras, just like so fat and smooth.
Fat and smooth.
So like, instead of a summer camp, you just get sent off to fat farm.
Yeah, is it just every summer?
I mean,
yeah.
How can this society afford to like give half its population 10 years of massive
overfeeding? Well, the men just must be really skinny. Yeah. They just deprive all the boys every summer. All of the food, all the harvests are just sent in massive trucks.
I mean, that's also massively kind of against the whole point of it, which is to prove the husband can look after the wife. We're going to put everyone on a farm.
Yeah. Apparently the husband has been preparing since she was 5 years old to marry this woman and has been providing the food for this to happen. You'd think that it would be after the marriage.
Yeah.
You'd think that after the marriage, it would then be like, well, look, she loses the
weight after the marriage, yeah, it means like he's clearly not feeding her enough.
Yeah. Yeah, they go to boot camps after the marriage.
Yeah. But if you've been to
pop-ups,
you can only go so far. You can only get so fat. There has to be a reverse transition at some point.
I think that should be, that's like an inspirational quote. You can only go so far. So you can only get so fat in front of like a sunset. Just Sasha things.
Yeah. So basically that's my fact. I hope you all enjoyed.
Thank you. I will be visiting Mauritania to inspect the fat camps.
Just fat ladies and monkey bars. But they just can't hold on. Yeah. Falling into a pile of cake.
Alright, well, my fourth word is gnome. Playing with the G there, silent G this time.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh.
I know. I'm wild. So it's a diminutive spirit in European folklore, introduced in the 16th century by Paracelsus, the alchemist, who, I must say, if you look up a picture of him, looks incredibly like James May.
Okay,
from
I'm
Top
looking
Gear.
Up.
Ooh, suspicious.
Paracelsus.
You can keep talking while we look
at
this.
I will. And so...
he does.
I implore you to look it up.
Really, yeah. Do it's worth it. The hat, also the red hat, is very fetching. Anyway,
so,
go on.
So yeah, he comes up with the word gnome, and it's like, which is quite late. It's not a really original folklore. And they're described as two spans high, and a span is the distance from your thumb to your little finger. So pretty small. And they're able to move through solid earth as easily as humans move through air.
Like a mole.
Ooh. Yes.
Basically, he's describing a mole.
Do moles move through earth as easily as we move through air?
Ask a mole. I would say yes. They can certainly move through earth quicker than I can. Just going to put that out there. Yep.
Like, is that your standard? Like, if they can do it better than me?
Yeah.
That's how Sasha measures everything.
Yeah. Anyway, right.
So yeah, they looked more like goblins for a very long time until
you know when you can't tell if something's a gnome or a goblin.
Well, they were kind of just like lumpish and sort of
ugly,
and they weren't really the kind of cheerful gnomes that we think of now. Until 1937, Snow White Disney was released, and then the Seven Dwarfs, and was like, that's what gnomes look like, even though it says dwarves. And so it was around this time that people started calling garden figures gnomes.
Okay.
But any figure, like, they didn't look like gnomes, just little statues you have in your garden. They called them gnomes. And then in the 60s and 70s, the sort of plastic gnomes that we know and love today in the form of red cheeks, beard, fishing, etc.
Yeah.
That's when they sort of became popular.
So the original Snow White myth, like fairy tale, had Snow White with just a bunch of little goblin men running around.
I don't know. I think there were dwarves as like mythology, because I know the Norse had them and things.
Yeah, but if they were not cute and fun to be around,
it would have been quite a disturbing story.
Yeah,
if they weren't wearing like little hats.
Yeah, and called like grumpy and happy and sleepy and
it gets a lot more disturbing.
Yeah, as do all fairy tales if you go beyond Disney.
And so. But the last 20 years have seen the rise of something called garden gnome liberation movements. And
I thought
I'd tell you a bit more about these. So the first one started in France. And for some reason, it's a massive thing in France. In 1997, Le Fonds pour la Libération des Gnomes du Jardin. And gnomes is the word for gnomes. They're like... And so the Garden Gnome Liberation Front, which sounds wonderfully like military.
They'll just revolt over anything, like any kind of like a revolution movement.
Yeah,
like, we've got our independence.
Any excuse for a liberation front.
And so they've got massive publicity. Like, the media love them because it's just so mental. And they just go around and they steal garden gnomes, basically.
And what do they do with them then? Set them free in the wilderness?
Well, that's their idea. They say that gnomes should have the same rights as us.
Okay, I assume I this is all tongue-in-cheek.
It's quite tongue-in-cheek, but the over the course of the first year that it was set up, the front, with a capital F is written, stole over 150 garden gnomes contending that garden gnomes deserve the same freedoms with which they were blessed, which is a nice thing. And what was the leader of the group was charged with, for stealing over 150 garden gnomes. He got the blame for the whole front.
So they just they burst into his house and he was just sitting in his living room with 150 gnomes watching the TV, Romeo and Juliet.
And they'll so he was given a suspended prison sentence and fined.
Imagine being the judge ruling this. Like, you've just come from a murder case, you're about to go on and look at some like GBH or something, and you're just like, so gnomes.
And in 1998, so the next year, there was another strike that has been attributed to the Garden Gnome Liberation Front. I keep wanting to say Front National, which is very different.
Yeah, yeah. I just keep thinking of the Judean People's Front, the People's Front of Judea.
And so the strike was known as the mass suicide. In Brie, a small city in eastern France, citizens woke up to find 11 garden gnomes hanging from a bridge with nooses around their necks.
Doesn't seem like liberation.
A nearby note stated, "When you read these few words, we will no longer be part of your selfish world, where we merely serve as pretty decorations." Except it would have been in French, so a lot sassier.
That's amazing.
Like, for 2 years following the mass suicide, the Garden Gnome Liberation Front were relatively silent. But in two
in mourning.
And then in 2000 there was a garden show which displayed 2,000 garden gnomes, like as a sort of piece of art, and the front liberated 20 of them.
Back
into the press.
That's not a lot. Out of 2,000, 20 is not... Come on, Liberation
Front.
Even
so, I can just picture them planning it like Ocean's 11 style.
Like with wire cutters and a laser.
I like to imagine that the leader of the Liberation Front is actually kind of Fight Club-esque. He thinks he's a gnome. Figure.
But I've got an image of them just like scurrying along underneath giant flower pots, stealing the odd gnome.
A guy in a van. A laptop in front of him.
We can't take too many. It'll be too obvious.
Like the Italian job, like driving around a mountain.
So, that is the Le Front pour la Libération de Nantes de Jardin.
Amazing. I will be signing up right away. Do they have a website?
I imagine so. I don't know if there's charges to become a member. I'll have a look, actually.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. We'll all just join the Liberation
of
Gnomes.
You have to prove that you've stolen a gnome.
A photo of you.
Send
like,
hostage pictures of you and the
selfie.
Gnome.
A selfie.
Entry requirement.
Send back bits of gnome.
Yeah, maybe they just go on holidays with the gnome, take pictures of the gnome in front of different...
That is another thing that they do. They like take photos of liberated gnomes in front of monuments, like on holiday.
Amazing. That's so cool. My last fact is nothing compared to this.
Nothing.
Are we ready to go on to my last fact? Are we prepared?
Yeah.
Mine's not very long.
That's fine.
So this is toxophobia, which is fear of being poisoned. I mean, any rational person surely is afraid of being poisoned. But this is extreme, like getting friends to test food and drink when you're out and about. To make sure that nothing is poisoned. Weirdly, one of the links that was near this was to do with Halloween food poisoning or something. So this is a massive thing that exploded in the 70s, where Halloween trick-or-treat things were spiked with razor blades or with rat poison and things. And it became this, it snowballed into this massive myth where parents wouldn't let their children out in case they got poisoned. There was one doctor who candy-coated some laxative tablets and handed them out to children and was charged with, outrage of public decency and unlawful dispensing of drugs. Then there's, in 1964, an annoyed Long Island woman gave out packages of inedible objects to children whom she believed were too old to be trick-or-treating. The packages contained items such as steel wool, dog biscuits, and ant buttons. Which I don't know what those are, but
she must have had just a massive chip in her shoulder.
She must have been like, "You are 13. You are too old for this." Maybe she was banned from trick or treating as a child.
When she was like 13, she went trick or treating once and just got abused.
There's a horror story lying in that for someone to a crazy old lady who just collects dog biscuits and hands them out. But surely, if the children are too old for trick or treating, they're too old to go, "I'm going to eat some steel wool." I don't know. Yeah, but some of them were really disturbing, like lye-filled bubblegum, rat poison. One girl claimed that she got a razor in her Snickers bar. The police said it was an isolated incident. Mm. But there are also a lot of misattributed deaths. So in 1970, this boy called Kevin in Detroit found and ate heroin that his uncle had stashed at their house. And he died, and the family tried to protect the uncle by claiming the drug had been sprinkled in his Halloween candy, which obviously did not happen because he just found his uncle's stash. I'm trying to think. Okay, so in 1978, there's one boy died after eating Halloween candy, but the toxicology tests say that there's no evidence of poison, so apparently he just ate too much
too
candy.
Too much candy.
That's what's happened.
I mean, we've all been there.
Yeah.
I find it's Easter is a dangerous one for me.
I feel close to death. After. Yeah,
you,
after
sort of,
that.
You slip in and out of a coma for the next couple of hours.
Yeah. It's just potluck whether you make it through.
But yeah, that's it's pretty awful.
I have just looked up the website for the front, the National Front of whatever.
the Front National
of Gnomes. And I've tried to sign you up to the newsletter, Sasha. But it says your email is invalid, unfortunately.
Oh.
I assume it only does French emails or something.
Mm.
But
well,
that's sad. It's a pretty dated website, not going to lie.
What has it got like?
It looks pretty
flashing,
old.
Moving it's banners across
sort of,
the top.
It,
and...
Like it has the last article posted is 2006.
Oh dear.
And it looks quite dated.
They've gone, gone underground.
Yeah. Building up to bigger and better things.
But yeah, I'm sure partners... Oh, well, whatever. I'll look up that sort of thing later in my own time.
Instead of doing the degree that we came here to do, instead we find ourselves researching gnome resistance. Are you okay, Lewis? You seem to be engrossed
in
this
I'm
website.
I'm enjoying this.
He's
website.
Lost. We've lost Lewis.
So, shall I do my last fact? Are you done with the Halloween stuff?
I'm done with the Halloween stuff.
Okay. Well, my final fact. And actually, we've got ourselves into a weird situation where we've got time.
I know. Normally, we drastically run out of time.
Yeah, and then we have a mad rush.
Oh, you're going to just have to speak very slowly.
So, I mean, you have to get those facts in.
Yeah. The world needs to know.
The world needs to.
My last one is the Galop Infernal, another French one, actually. And so it's a composition from Jacques Offenbach's operetta Orpheus in the Underworld.
Okay.
Which was first performed in 1858.
I see.
And it is not that well known, but you'll recognise the song when you hear it, the Infernal Galop. And Galop is a kind of double speed dance.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound that infernal. I mean, it sounds quite pleasant. When you hear it, you'll know what I mean. But I mean, maybe Tarantism, that dude with the guitar. Just a bit of galop. That's all. That's what was going on there.
That's where we got it from.
Yeah, absolutely. So are we just going to sit here and wait for the time to get closer?
Do you have the song?
I have the song, but it's only 2 minutes long, and
so
we have 4 minutes left.
And we've got to wait until 1858.
All right.
Let's just fill this with meaningless chit-chat. How was everyone's day?
I mean, surely we could come up with more facts.
I don't know. My fact, I'm going to see. Maybe there are more weird wedding traditions.
What other ones did I have possible? I had possibles.
Possibles?
Yeah, that I didn't use.
I'm going to... By the time we find anything, it'll be out of time anyway.
Oh, well.
No, don't know. We've lost
it.
There are no more facts, people. We're out of facts. It's official.
The world is out of facts.
I found gloaming means...
Dusk.
Dusk,
we use that word at home.
The gloaming.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I've heard that quite a lot. People over here don't seem to use it. Yeah. I think it's quite a nice word. It's quite romantic sounding, I think.
Gastrolith is a stone animals swallow to help their digestion.
What? They find the stone.
Yeah, they eat one and then it like goes around their stomach and like breaks things up.
Sorry, I found a really funny fact.
Okay.
There is a museum of broken relationships in Croatia.
Been to it.
Have you actually?
Yeah, I have.
A museum
that
showcases...
It's not just a euphemism. It'd be like, I am the museum. I've broken relationships.
It's inside of me.
So it's paraphernalia left behind after a marriage has failed.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. It's the one interesting thing to do in Zagreb, in Croatia, is that.
That's it. That's people come
I've been to Dubrovnik, but not Zagreb.
Yeah, I mean, Zagreb is... It's just grey buildings and that museum. It's an interesting place, though.
Cool.
This, I mean, the picture that accompanies this is a really moldy gingerbread cookie and a story that that's sat beside it going, "We met at Oktoberfest," and ends with, like, "Do not contact me ever again."
Oh, dear.
All right. I'm going to put L'Inferno Galop on.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you for listening. Thank you, Richard, for coming in as well.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a lot of fun. Yeah, so enjoy.